What's poppin', everybody? Hello and welcome to Popcorn Culture. My name is Ben Carlin, and I am your host. Here with me today is my brother, who will be in every episode. His name is Jay. I totally left that part out.
Yeah. Oh, you left that part out? Thanks so much, brother. You
know, co-host.
For the true host, I dare say, you might have gotten the other host's name correctly.
Nah, you know, nobody ever said that the one true host needs to be the best host.
Oh, just has to be the true host.
Just has to be the true host.
You'd think the true host would know the name of the other person and introduce them, but I'm just saying, I'm not like salty or anything that Patreon chose you as the host for now. For now.
For now and for always.
Well, until possibly next week. You know, you never know. The numbers might change.
The numbers might change, you're right.
It could happen.
Yeah. Jonathan Lewis Carlin.
That's me.
See, I know your whole name.
Yeah.
Look at me.
I know you know it, but if you don't say it,
then they don't know it.
Then what's the point? Why even have a name?
Why do we even have that lever? Oh my gosh.
You know, that joke in particular, I'm always like, when Cusco pulls the wrong lever, I'm like, why does she even have that lever? So to stop intruders. For you. You're the reason. Like,
Oh, so like when Cusco says, like, why does she even have that lever?
Yeah.
It's like, for this exact reason. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so. But even when she says it, why do we have that lever? It's like, to stop other people. Like, I don't understand what the confusion is about.
So do you not like, if we're talking about the Emperor's New Groove, for those three of you who didn't get the reference here. So do you not like this particular joke in the Emperor's New Groove?
I mean, I like it just fine. I just don't think it makes sense. That much. Like,
plenty
I like the idea that she has it, that she installed a lever. I guess what I must assume is that she actually installed the lever for no reason.
Okay, this is fascinating to me that you take such particular issue with this, because you and I debate Harry Potter all the time.
Yeah.
And whether or not we think that there was like a very clear-cut plan from the beginning. And you are always 1000% adamant that, yes, absolutely, the diary from the beginning and for always was 100% always going to eventually be a horcrux.
Yeah, that's right.
And I always disagree with you.
Oh, well,
always.
You're not sold.
I'm not sold. I mean, I think that there's, it's kind of like, I think there are things that are so much fun for us. Like when it comes to writing fan theories, plot holes are your best friends in the world.
Oh yeah.
Like, because usually what it is like us as theorists basically live in a world where we assume there are no mistakes.
Yeah.
Just further explanation needed.
Exactly. And so that's why I have to live in that world.
Well, it's why you have to live in that world. But I think also just as a general realist, I have to know, I mean, like, do you genuinely think this, or is it sort of like part of your / our brand that you must always be absolute in this belief, because to waver in that would be to belittle the very work that we do?
No, I don't think it belittles it. I just think there are too many other examples of planning in the books that make the ones that seem less planned more credible as planned things. Like, for example, in Prisoner of Azkaban, when Harry tells Dumbledore that Trelawney finally, like, gave him, like, a true prophecy about what was going to happen with Wormtail, Dumbledore says that brings her total up to 2. And it's like, that's 2 books before you find out what on earth he's talking about, what the first one was.
Oh, yeah. No, there's no doubt about it. Like, I think that there are plenty of really good moments where I think the Harry Potter series is best enjoyed in multiple reiterations, like, mm-hmm. like going through and rereading the books. I've always said, like, I wish I could reread the Harry Potter books again, but I almost don't even think that's true. Like, I almost think the true fun is rereading them again. Mm-hmm. Like, it's not the first pass, it's going through and being like, whoa, like,
oh.
I never realized that they, like, reference this specific thing so early, and it does eventually go on to pay off.
Right.
But, like, there are things like the Thestrals, you know, the fact that there are these carriages that are pulled by nothing.
Yeah.
Until Harry can finally see them after Cedric's death, but not immediately after Cedric's death, but like one summer later when he's fully come to terms with it, then mm-hmm. he can see them.
Yeah.
So point being, like, at the end of Goblet of Fire, he doesn't see them. And then at the beginning of Order of the Phoenix, he does see them. Or how they always call, like, the Azkaban guards, Azkaban guards.
Oh, that's so annoying.
Until they're Dementors, which case they're just Dementors for the rest of time.
Right. That's just writing so that you can introduce them in a spooky way.
Right.
Which is annoying because it's like they all talk about them in this. I don't want to even name the name of the creature. I would say that Thestrals I would say I'm always steadfast about the diary having been planned as a Horcrux, but I would be okay with the Thestrals. I could believe the Thestrals were included in Order of the Phoenix after her not actually knowing.
Okay, but see, the thing about that though is that we've actually made a theory about the giant squid before, with the idea that the giant squid is the thing that draws all of the boats across the lake.
Yeah.
In like the first years as they're entering the castle for the first time, which I sort of love.
Me too.
Especially because, is it Colin Creevy's little brother?
Dennis, yeah.
Who falls in and he's like, I was picked up on the giant squid. You know? It's like, he's so excited about it. So I sort of love the idea that the boats and the carriages are being like, you know,
Pulled by magical creatures.
Mm-hmm. So when does Dennis arrive on scene? Is that in Goblet?
I think it must be in Goblet because Harry misses the first two sortings after his own.
Oh, you're right. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. They keep having Harry. That's the other thing. She hated writing Sorting Hat songs.
Oh, for sure she hated writing Sorting Hat songs. She's like, how can I avoid writing this song?
This is a thing I do with J.K. Rowling all the time where it's like, man, how are these books so long? And I feel like it's so frequently that she has to have like an enormous entire long narrative just so you can like get to the point where either something was introduced and then you're far enough away from it that bringing it back up doesn't just seem like I just introduced port keys.
Yeah.
Also, the Triwizard Cup is a port key. You know, yeah. It's like Goblet of Fire is what, like 750 pages long or something. Mm-hmm. It's like, it's this absurdly long book. Very early on, we have this manky old boot that just brings everybody to the Quidditch World Cup. And then eventually,
yeah.
The whole big thing is.
Yeah.
But I wonder when she's writing like that, whether or not, or when the inspiration to bring certain characters into the fold happens. Like if in her mind she's like, okay, like I'm gonna need like a way to have a port key be something that I haven't introduced before, be relevant to the story. So where could they all go? The Quidditch World Cup. Okay, so let's have this guy Victor Crumb be this big character, you know, the big
right.
Quidditch whatever. And it's like, oh, I can have Crumb be one of the guys in the Triwizard Tournament. Like what came first?
I think you start at the end and work backwards.
Okay, so you think
for sure.
The greater likelihood is that the Triwizard Cup was a port key before Victor Crumb was in the Triwizard Tournament?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
I think
okay,
she was
good.
Like, this book needs to end with Harry ending up at the graveyard.
Right.
And then you have to figure out, okay, so how do I get him from Hogwarts to the graveyard? There's really not a good way. I've said he can't apparate. Crap. How do I work around that? Okay, I'll have this other thing. Port keys. Great. I'll introduce that later. Okay, how does Harry be the one to touch it? Okay, we'll have this Death Eater do this. And you just sort of keep working backwards from
okay,
there.
Okay, okay.
And then the Quidditch World Cup is all just about introducing the idea of the international students and the greater wizarding world. And because like, oh, how convenient that Floor's part Vila, but they just learned what Vilas were at the World Cup. You know, like, oh, what are the odds?
What are the odds?
I know.
It's like, hey. Hey, Vilas, let's have those come right back yeah. immediately.
Yeah. I've just been reading Order of the Phoenix, and I think in particular, you can see this one a lot more because the circumstances she wants to have happen at the end are Harry and his five friends end up away from Hogwarts at the Ministry of Magic to pick up a thing only Harry can pick up or Voldemort, but all the Death Eaters have to be there and the Order has to be there and Dumbledore and Voldemort are going to fight at the Ministry of Magic. Like, she wanted that particular ending. She's like, okay, why does Harry have to go? Only he can pick it up. Then why doesn't Voldemort go? So she's like, explain that. And it's like, why does it take him so long to realize that only he can pick it up? You know, she's like, all these obstacles she has to introduce so that it ends at, you know, in the spring.
Right. Yeah. So, and maybe in part, you know, speaking to the length of a book, Order of the Phoenix is even longer than Goblet of Fire.
Yeah.
So do you think in any way, shape or form that Thestrals are introduced then because
yeah.
they need a way
yeah, that's
to get
exactly
there?
Why.
Yeah.
Totally.
So Thestrals and port keys both sort of have this like thing that's very consistent between these two books back to back, where very early on you learn what it is, and then way at the very end it's super relevant. Okay, so going back to Goblet though, you have the Triwizard Tournament. What do you think is the purpose behind setting up the circumstances where not only Harry shouldn't be included in the tournament, but that he needs to be so much younger? Like, did she intentionally need for him to be like this obvious underdog, like, by age? Does that make sense? The manipulation is that Harry never would have been selected.
Right.
So in order for his name to have come out, the Goblet would need to believe that there's a fourth school.
Right.
Of which Harry is the only
yeah.
candidate.
So the Goblet doesn't care about your age. the judges have to enforce that no one younger than whatever 17 enters on their own. If Fred and George or something had ever gotten their name in, they could have been chosen by the goblet because it doesn't care.
Okay.
To which I say, they're like, how do we walk across this age line? I'm like, guys, put your name on like 100 paper footballs and just toss them until you get one in, beer pong style.
Beer pong style.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, come on, guys. You're thinking way too magically about a very obvious underhand granny shot situation here. You know what I mean? All you gotta do is toss it in. This isn't even that hard. It doesn't sound... The age line needed to be like at the door.
Oh, like you couldn't even enter.
Yeah, you couldn't even get near it. Because like, I don't... No one thinks of throwing it. And then even Dumbledore asks him like, did you ask an older student to put your name in? I'm like, ooh, that was really... That would have been the easy way. Hey, Angelina, could you put me and Fred's name in?
It's not a very well thought out problem if someone older than you could just put the name in.
I know, like they have this age line. So dumb. Put it in a locked room, put a teacher in front of the door and be like, would you like to sign up for the Triwizard Tournament? Great. How old are you? Sorry, you cannot go through this door.
Because isn't it only up for like one day?
Yeah. No, it's up for like a good while.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's up for I think like a couple weeks even.
Okay. Okay.
But still, see, this is the other thing, because that makes sense. But they need a way that isn't checked that someone can sneak Harry's name in.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Sure. Okay, so next question for you then.
Okay.
what on earth is the point of Cho Chang?
Oh, Ben, let me tell you about Cho Chang.
You gonna tell me about Cho Chang? Do you have thoughts? Can you finally...
She's one of my most frustrating characters.
Yeah.
Because Harry likes her for 3 books.
Yeah.
You know? And they never get to be happy.
They
and
never
that's what bothers me.
Like, I think... I feel like you're exactly right. Like, there should have been a circumstance, I think, where they date.
Yes.
Like where Harry just... has a girlfriend.
Yeah.
And instead you get this like, it's one of my least favorite chapters of the entire series, up with the Death Day party, is the chapter where they go to Madame Puttyfoot's tea shop.
Yes.
And you just have this whole exchange with, like, where I can't even like wrap my head around what is going on with Cho Chang and Harry and her frustration with Hermione and how Adam Davies, who's making out with someone right next to them.
Roger Davies. Also, I'm imagining this tea shop, which sounds like it is about the size of this room. It sounds like a very tiny shop, and it sounds like literally every table is just making out.
Yeah.
Except for Harry and Cho.
Yeah.
I'm like, what is going on? Like, never have I been in a coffee shop and seen 2 people making out across the table. That'd be so weird.
It would be the weirdest thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, never have I ever been like, you know, hot date spot? That tea shop.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, it's not great. I always like there's the time where they're walking from the castle towards Hogsmeade and they're having a pleasant conversation about Quidditch, and I'm like, I'm so happy for Harry in this like quarter mile walk. I'm like, I wanted like 4 chapters of that.
Yeah,
just like, we're in a good mood. Harry met up with Cho. It was great. We had good times. It doesn't have to have been for long. Just like some amount of Harry actually had a girlfriend and had a high school relationship and had to deal with like, oh, I tell Harry or Ron and Hermione everything. Should I tell Cho all these weird Voldemort secrets? You know, that would have been an interesting path to go down. But Cho Chang gets the shaft. I mean, she doesn't get... I feel like she's a cool character and... It would have been cool to see Harry and Cho play each other in Quidditch when,
While they were dating.
While they're dating.
That would be interesting.
You know, maybe that's why they break up. I don't know. Doesn't really matter.
Even if you wanted to further tee up Ginny, because on the flip side of the rest of this is Harry's love life is weird because Ginny is like, she has like the very classic, you know, just like crush on Harry from afar in like chamber.
Yeah.
Right. And but at that point in time, you sort of do, for whatever reason, even though it's only like 1 year's difference, it does seem like Harry and company are like the older kids and she's still like a child.
Yeah.
Like it definitely seems like, you know, they're not in the circumstances where dating would like be like something that would make sense. But then Ginny just sort of like falls off the radar for a while, like where it would have been kind of interesting to see like a moment where like Ginny is starting to like, I don't know if become jealous would be like the right way to like execute this, but like starting to introduce her interest by means of Harry's relationship with Cho.
With Cho.
Because like once Ginny sort of comes into the fold as like, you you know, the candidate, it's sort of just like on fast forward through the rest of it. Like, if anything, and I've said this before, and I know that like this is like not my pop, like this is not a popular opinion amongst others, but you know, what better place to talk about it than here on the pop?
Yeah.
Is I've always rooted for Harry and Hermione.
Oh, you're a Hermione.
Hashtag Hermione. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. Because I guess I don't really know why, but I feel like there are all of these like little moments where I feel like Hermione does particularly thoughtful things like for Harry. Like, I think one year she sends him like the broom servicing kit, mm-hmm. which to me always felt like a very generous like gift.
Oh, you think
like,
so?
Like the way, yeah, like it seemed like everything was like, it was like a heavy package and she like ordered it, you know, special for him from this.
See,
like,
I've always been fairly unimpressed by the broom servicing kit.
Maybe that's a difference between you and I, like where I would be like, dude, what could possibly be cooler than a broom servicing
than a
kit?
Broom servicing
like,
kit.
Like, I would be so excited with a broom servicing kit.
I mean, maybe.
Great gift.
Maybe. I've always felt like she got it, like, it sounds to me that she got the broom servicing kit at the wizarding equivalent of Sharper Image or something. And it's just, these are all, just this is just a gift, this is like a wizard gift shop, is what it sounds like to me. Like, I don't know that much about brooms, but Harry has a broom and this is four brooms? Here you go, it's like the gifts you get from your aunt who you see once a year at Christmas. They're like, oh yeah, the boys like sports. Here's some frisbee golf. And you're like, well, yeah, you got, I mean, it's in the realm of sports, but
there is an aisle at Walmart that sells these in the sports department.
You were like, well, they probably have all the other sports balls, but hey, this is a fun game.
Right. Yeah. You've talked about like your snowball gifts before. And I do feel like there is sort of that category of people who know you're into something, but have absolutely no idea how to shop for that particular interest.
Uh-huh.
For me growing up, I always had like aquariums.
Yeah.
So for people to, it's like, it's very difficult to give an aquarium based gift.
Yeah. They want to give you like the plastic plants or something. And you're like, yeah, but this is kind of like, no one really uses plastic plants.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you got to go live plants, inject CO2.
Yeah.
Obviously. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to have all the right monitors, probes, you know, controlling apparatus.
But so then even if someone got you some sort of like technical gift like that, I feel like you would just know this didn't really come from them.
Oh, sure.
You know,
sure.
That means you asked somebody who asked somebody who is your dad.
Who is like, this is exactly, actually that very thing did happen. There was one year where, like a family friend gave me a ASM G1X protein skimmer for my birthday.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the one.
The one that
all the kids wanted back then.
Yeah, every Christmas gift I got, I was like, is this a GMX skimmer? No way, Dad.
ASM G1X, get it right.
I've already forgotten.
Anyway,
you think I have a weird memory for things?
It's true. It's
You're naming
true.
Model numbers of protein skimmers over there.
Hey, it was an industry standard. No, this is one of those weird things where I do sometimes feel like, because like in all of our Jay versus Ben quizzes, we always do talk about your like absurd knowledge for all things in this realm.
Yeah.
And I have been like, you know, if we just talked about one of the things that I naturally gravitated towards as a kid, then the tables would be awfully turned, wouldn't they?
Well, you say that, but I want to say as kids, you were a bigger Harry Potter fan than I was at one point.
At one point, for sure, I would have said, I had like my whole bedroom was like adorned in Harry Potter
snitch lamp.
Yeah, I had a snitch lamp
for sure.
Yeah, it was really great. Grandma gave me a tapestry of like Harry Potter that I hung from the wall.
Yeah,
I had charms and stuff like physical.
Yeah,
you know, things. That's a good point. I have forgotten about it. It's like I
so you've forgotten about it.
I know, right?
Exactly. That's the problem.
I almost feel like I
remember your fandom better than you do.
Right, like I grew out of it and you grew into it, I think, is what happened.
There was a girl I dated in high school, and I feel like I remember you talking about your situation with Alice where you feel like you stole the fandom from her, like she thought she was a big fan.
Oh, yeah.
Until she met you and she was like, wow, maybe this isn't as fun or whatever.
That's exactly what happened.
Yeah. So I remember being a really big Harry Potter fan in high school, like thinking like, I'm like really into this. And there was this one girl I dated, like you could not be around her family without them telling you how many times she had reread the Harry Potter books. Like, it was like, dare you to try and even think of yourself as a fan when my daughter has read these books 50 times each. And you're like, well, that's fantastic. But I am now a full-time Harry Potter analyst. So there.
So there. So in the run of things, what is she, a doctor now?
Yeah.
I won.
Yeah. No. But I was just like, I feel like I was not given enough credit at this time.
Okay. There is one thing that I will say about people who claim the number of times that they have read the Harry Potter books, and I know that I too have been guilty of this, mm-hmm. is the sheer exaggeration of the number of times people have said that they've read the books.
Oh.
Because I think this is the type of thing where people will be like, oh yeah, like I read the books like 60 times in high school. It's like, no, you did not.
60 is a lot.
60 is so many times. Yeah. Like I think as many times, because I've always had this like approximation in my head that I've probably read the books 50 times at this point in my life. And I'm sure that number fluctuates based on like which conversation mm-hmm. we had and when and everything. But I think over the past 6 months or so, we had one moment at one of our meetups in person where we had somebody come through the line.
Yeah.
And she like reamed me out because she said, like, I do not believe how often you say you read the books and you still get these answers wrong on the quizzes. And it stuck with me in like the most unusual way. And this person's reached out to me and they've apologized so many times. So I am not trying to call you out or throw you under the bus or anything. And you were very sweet. Thank you for coming to our meetup. But so since then I was like, okay, it is on. And since that period of time, I have gone through and read and reread and reread and reread the Harry Potter books in like the past 6 months. And I've probably read all the way through, I think, 5 times.
Wow.
Since that happened.
Impressive.
Yes. Yes.
Well, that is very good. I think there is a setting in Audible where you can look and see how many times you've read any given book. Repeat listener.
Let's see here. Listen.
This says, I have the medal unlocked for repeat listener, which is you've listened to the same audiobook at least 10 times. So that must have happened.
That's got it.
I don't know if I can look at the settings per book. Can you?
I know. It's so interesting.
I'm trying to find out.
So my listening time. Actually, I'm curious. Do you have your listening time in front of you on Audible?
Hold on. Let me pull it up. See how many times I've listened to any individual book. I just had it though. Hold on. Let me pull it up again. Okay. What is your total listening time on Audible?
Okay. So I'm super curious whether or not this takes into account the fact that I listen to books at 2x speed.
Okay.
Because if it doesn't. Like, if it doesn't account for that, then I have, like, read in book length time. You know, like, if it takes, like, 12 hours to read Sorcerer's Stone, I read it in 6.
I think it is giving you 6 hours worth of time.
For that. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I have 22 days, 18 hours, 51 minutes.
You child.
What do you have?
I have 2 months.
Whoa!
4 days, 11 hours, and 58 minutes.
Goodness.
There you go.
Wow. Okay. So you listen way more than I do.
I think so. Although this is probably, this is my lifetime on Audible. And I think I was into audiobooks maybe before you. Certainly even before we were doing full-time stuff and I was just listening to Harry Potter, I listened to like all of the Game of Thrones books and much of Sherlock. And I don't know. My library is pretty big in there.
That's true. I do think that you've listened. Man, I am actually kind of blown away because I would say every single drive I'm on and like all weekends when I'm like, you know, doing yard work for the entire day, mm-hmm. I have headphones on and I'm listening to books.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It could be the case that maybe my 2x speed means I'm covering more ground faster.
That's probably what it means. Yeah. Like you're not getting the list. I mean, you're just covering more books. It should still be the same amount of time. Same amount of time.
But yeah. I suppose probably the amount of reading you're getting out of it would be dictated by the number of books.
Well,
oh, fascinating. Well, yeah. You have absolutely crushed me and set aspirations. Guys, now I need to know. I'm sure that we're going to get like absurd numbers, but you have to email in to popcornculturepod@gmail.com what your Audible listening information is.
Yeah, I am curious to know what is, and if you want to access it, all you have to do is go to your profile. It's the top left thing. Click me, and then that'll bring you to listening time, and you can click total from there. How many of you have listened to more than 2 months worth of books?
Yeah, let us know.
Yeah, that's exciting. Speaking of yard work, Ben.
Okay.
So this past weekend, I had to mow my yard for the first time at my new house.
Whoa.
I know. I moved in December, and this is the first time it's called for it. And let me ask you, how often have you gone to get your lawnmower out for the first time after the winter break, and it has just not started? Or has that ever happened to you?
That has happened to me on a couple of occasions, but I would say it's maybe once or twice.
Once or twice. I was fearing this particular chore because I was like, there's just no way it's going to start. There's just no way. Because this is the sort of thing I have bad luck with for whatever reason. I went out and I could not get my lawnmower to start. And you know, it's one of these situations where your capacity to solve the problem is pretty limited. You know, if it's not that the blade itself is stuck on grass that's caked on there, or the filter just needs a little cleaning out, or it needs gas, that's about as much as I can do.
Did you have to drip gas into the carburetor?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't even know how to do that.
You would drip gas, you would take the filter off, and then drip gas into, like, effectively the hole.
All right. I didn't do that.
That's okay. Did you ever get it started?
No, I didn't. However, our father lent me his lawnmower so I could mow the yard, which it desperately needed.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Did you bag it, or did you just, like, sort of use the tosser?
Self-mulching.
Self-mulching, yeah. Okay.
If I had to self-bag it, one, I don't know where I would dump it, because there's not a real obvious spot at my new house for dumping your grass clippings. And two, in my experience, when I used to bag grass at my old house, which had a significantly smaller yard, I still probably had to empty it 3 or 4 times, if not more, per mow.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure.
This would have added, I would have had to do it at like 15 times easily.
You do have a considerably bigger yard now.
Considerably.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. It took me well over 2 hours to finish mowing the whole thing. And let me tell you a new problem I've never suffered before.
Let's hear it.
Is that when the way you grip the top of a lawnmower handle, you have to hold down this little bar.
Yeah.
Right. And as you know, as you're mowing, the whole thing vibrates the whole time.
Yes.
Yes. Let me tell you, not visible to the naked eye, but do I have a bruise across the middle of my palm on both hands?
What?
Yes, it is so annoying. Like, have you ever bruised the palm of your hand, Ben?
No.
So frustrating.
I most certainly have not.
Yes.
Well, are you sure you were doing it right?
I am positive I was doing it right, Ben. I have mowed many, many lawns. And,
okay, so I'm going to need to know more about this, because I do think that in general, you have not exactly ever read to me, and it could have been because your previous house wasn't really set up in such a way that it was a big deal, as like a yard work kind of person.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's never really seemed like I almost do it for fun.
Right.
Well, I look forward to it.
Sure.
And I have like all of my like matching tools and like my routine and the whole
bit.
Your house is now in like the most prominent location in your particular neighborhood.
I am in one of those houses that needs to look good.
Yes. Yeah. Like the whole neighborhood is represented probably in some way
by
your house.
I could affect property value for other homes.
What an enormous amount of responsibility. How does that feel?
Well, the thing is, when it comes to yard care, is that until I owned my last house, it wasn't really a massive concern.
Right.
I mean, we lived at our parents' house. If dad made us do yard work, that was normally just meant that we couldn't do what we wanted to do.
Sure.
It was like, hey, you're going to come help me move mulch. Have a good weekend. Great.
There it is.
And then, you know, you're in college. Even when you and I were living in a house together and like renting, it was like, we mowed, but it wasn't, you know, it wasn't our responsibility to make the landscaping look good.
No, yeah, for sure. I think like when you're renting a property, it's a much lower, you're mostly doing it because like if it's like actively just getting absurd, it's kind of like, well, let's go fire it up.
Yeah, yeah. So then when I got to the house I lived in prior to my present home, the yard work wasn't, like the yard itself, as far as like mowing, wasn't very big, but it was like a 3-tiered yard from like the front yard was right next to the road.
Okay.
And that was about it. It was just this narrow strip. And then the backyard had another narrow strip then there was like 2 steps into the upper backyard, which was also a pretty small area. So mowing itself didn't take long, but there was shrubbery and bushes and 1,000 different kinds of fauna, it felt like, growing out of every which crevice and cranny. I mean, you helped me work on it several times, and it was just a war out there.
It truly was. This is the type of thing where we would go to your house. I would like show up with like chainsaws.
Yeah.
Plural.
Yeah.
Like weed eaters, mowers, like clippers of all varieties.
So I mean,
you would
nature.
Go back there, wail at it, take like truckloads to the dump of just pure waste. And it would still be like, man, we barely made a dent.
It was just
And
outrageous.
It wasn't a big yard.
It wasn't that big. I don't, someone was just determined to cram in stuff. So I feel like I inherited a bit of a mess. I cannot use that excuse anymore because the person who owned my current house before me was immaculate.
Yeah.
They were very good at it. The landscaping is nice, but I feel like I'm excited about it because I'm like, I can take care of it. I can do this. I know I can do it. But man, there is a certain amount of like manliness that I felt like in a bad mood all day because I couldn't get this mower started. And I'm like, this is one of those weird checks that feels like I am not much of a man right now. I can't even get this lawnmower started.
Oh, I wouldn't think that at all.
Oh, I mean, maybe certainly I shouldn't. It's like, I don't know how to take apart a lawnmower and it's just been sitting there. What was it supposed to do?
Right. Yeah. No, I wouldn't trouble yourself at all with that. I don't think that's a particularly big deal. This is like one of those things though that when you moved into that house, I very quietly, we're talking about like how I stole Harry Potter from Alice.
Yeah.
I have been like, I don't know what, like, because you're always good at stuff once you get into it.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, I don't know what's going to happen if Jay gets really into yard work and all of a sudden steals my glory.
I wouldn't be trying to steal your glory.
Oh, but you will.
But I will.
But you will inevitably. Yes. Oh, goodness me. Yeah.
I do think my yard will necessitate more tools.
Ooh.
You know, I certainly am going to need like a leaf blower now. And I probably should have bagged though, because the lawn was so thick that the self-mulching thing was not effective because it's too clumpy.
Way too much clump.
It works once it's short, and then it just mulches back into itself.
Right.
And you're on top of it. But the first round, which this was, pretty clumpy.
See. Yeah. Got to be careful with those clumps.
You do.
This is one of those things where last year I got like one of those robot mowers.
Oh, yes.
Like it's kind of like a Roomba, but for your yard.
The brand deal that wasn't.
The brand deal that never did. This was like one of those really strange things where a company reached out to me and they were like, hey, we would like to send you, this particular mower. And they're pretty expensive.
Right.
They are. So I was like, okay, like I would totally do this in exchange for posting about it. And it came out and I was like, I'm pretty like on top of my yard. Like
yeah.
I spend a lot of time with it. And my yard died.
From the mower.
I believe so. I mean, I don't exactly, I've never been able to like totally pinpoint whether or not it was because it was like a super dry summer and everything just dried up. But one way or another, at the beginning of the year, it looked great. And by the end of the season, it was like, I was like, I don't know how to fulfill this brand deal because like, I literally can't post a before and after of my yard because it is that stark of a difference.
Right. Like,
so
it looks worse.
It looks worse.
Yeah. I remember, I feel like you were stressing about it so much because they kept emailing you saying, where's the next post? And you were like, I'll send you what it looks like now, but it's worse.
That's exactly what was happening. Yeah. I was like, and I remember I got on the phone with like engineers like from their department that were like supposed to help me explain like why it might not be working and things that I could be doing differently. And it's like my own personal troubleshooting had already gone so far beyond what anybody was able to deliver to me. But yeah, no, I mean, it was like an unpaid brand deal that was just purely for product. And the whole time, I mean, I lost so many nights of sleep over it because
Oh, wow.
I was like, yeah, I felt so bad.
That sounds like people pleasering.
It is.
Plaguing you.
Goodness me. Okay. So I have to talk about this because it has been like this biggest realization, but at the same time, I'm afraid it's making me a terrible person because
it's the same thing circling back on itself.
You're the
snake eating its own tail right now.
I am. I know. And it's killing me. Like, I feel like I've had more negative interactions with people in the past, maybe like 2 to 3 weeks of my life since I've realized that I have this like knee jerk, immediate instinct to live inside of this like people pleasery world.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I keep trying to do, and I mean, I'm making like an active effort to do this, is like stand up for myself in more situations than I think that I typically have before, where it's like normally I would just say something and, or if somebody was like, you know, said something that directly competed with what I was saying or the way that I viewed the world or something, it's like there's really no need to like fix this right now, like what's the trouble in causing a fuss over it. And so what I'm discovering is that I'm like, I'm so bad at it. And I've always wondered my whole life, I'm like, I've got good tact, you know, like I'm good at communicating with others and being friendly and being likable. And like, you know, like that's an asset that I might have.
Yeah.
And now what I'm realizing is like, the problem is that like, it's not a skill if all you're ever doing is like agreeing with what
ever doing is taking on responsibility.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think that like I've had this massive sense of like fear or loss of identity because I've always felt like the type of person like that I didn't worry that I would like put people off necessarily. Like
right.
I could be easy to get along with. And now I'm like, man, now I feel like I'm simultaneously not being easy to get along with, by causing strife. I've like wanted to respond to like mean comments.
Oh, and still shouldn't do that.
Still shouldn't do that. I know. That's one of those things where I'm like, is this one of those moments? Should I try it? And that's the other thing too. Yeah. It's like, I don't know the circumstances
right
when you're supposed to. So for me, in my mind, it's just been like a switch flip where it's like, instead of letting everything wash over you and never causing a fuss, it's like the exact opposite. It's like, cause a fuss every single time.
Like you're overcorrecting.
I'm overcorrecting.
Yeah.
I need to find that happy little like middle ground that works a lot better.
If you get mean comments, what you should do is just for either delete them or block that person.
Yeah, no, and in general, I mean, you know this about me, like when it comes to sort of like our digital presence, I definitely try to keep myself at a helpful arm's length at most times from any circumstances that might bring you down. Because we've talked about it before, but there's this like one comic strip once upon a time where it was like a guy gets up after, you know, sleeping through the night and he checks his comments and like all the comments are like amazing, beautiful, wonderful, like you did such a good job, this was so funny, and like the very like last comment like in bright red is like, you suck. And then like as the day, like you see the person going through their day and like all the positive comments are slowly popping, and like by the time you get to night, the only one left over your head is that like dark red, you suck. And I don't know what it is about this, like I don't know why criticism takes such a hold when positive comments don't. Like, I feel like it's so easy to think anybody who said something nice about you, it's like easier to assume like that they're either just being nice.
Right. Right. Because it's like, oh, they're just being nice, but it's not like they're just being mean.
Exactly. You know? Yeah. It's such a different thing. Like, so you let these like negative comments take hold in such a way that it's just so much harder to escape from it. And I it like makes me so sad that that's the case.
Right.
I always think about this from like a like developmental thing, from like an evolutionary standpoint. Like, what is the evolutionary function of negative reaction or like remembering negative things?
Oh, I'm not sure that's like an evolutionary thing.
No,
like it's like a learned behavior.
Okay.
Yeah. I think it is I bet, here's my theory for why it might stick on you in particular as like a people pleaser sort of person, is because you can't even fathom being mean to somebody.
True.
In a general situation. So, like, yeah, I think I would bet that your brain is doing the mental gymnastics of what would someone have, someone would have to offend me to such a level for me to be mean to them. So, what must I have done that has offended this person to such a level that they're being mean? I must have been terrible for them to be mean to me, because that's what it would take for me to be mean to someone.
Right. No, I think you might be exactly right. Like, I'm like the bar to have said something this terrible is so like high. Surely they knew my intention was never
right
to cause this.
Yeah.
Which, yeah, I mean, that's the thing. But then it also pulls in such a strange question of like intent versus impact, you know, which I think is such a like highly scrutinized thing in today's world of the internet.
Yeah.
You know, where your voice can just like travel or not, you know, depending on the circumstances and the relationship associated with having the kind of audience that we do. But like something that happened to me over the weekend is they announced for The Mandalorian that they have cast Ahsoka Tano.
Oh, yeah.
Which like to me, I was like, whoa, what a ridiculously cool thing. Like, this is a character and I'm not even into. Is it Clone Wars?
Clone Wars.
Yeah. So I'm not like a particularly big Clone Wars character fan, but I love this character of Ahsoka. And the whole time that like the sequel trilogy was coming out, I was like, oh, they're going to bring her in at some point and it's going to be like so sweet.
Right.
You know, like the total, you know, like Anakin's foil or something.
Right.
And so I see this information and I'm like, yes. So I go to retweet it. And then I guess it turns out that the woman they cast in this particular role, there's like been some like negative press with over the past several months, and or not past several months, like I think in last October, recording this in March. And it's one of those strange things where when you go to try to like figure something like this out, it's like, did I just inadvertently, you know, show support for something that makes other people like feel small in some way?
Right.
You know, or did I just like cause impact with no intent?
Right.
And it's so hard to know because it would feel so innocuous to me. It's like, oh, Ahsoka, finally. Like,
right.
That's what I was excited about. Not like the casting call, but of course the post that I said is the casting call.
Right.
And so it's such a hard thing to wrap your head around. And I have no idea whether or not I do this to others as well, like where they may, like if I'm so much more in the know about a particular thing and somebody shares it, and then you see yourself sitting there being like, oh man, like I wonder if they knew when they shared this. Like, am I being critical in the same way that the people who were in the know about this casting felt? Does that make sense?
I think it does make sense. Yeah. Like if you're just excited that they are casting a live action version of a character you like.
Right.
And it's like, great. Is it, and you're wondering, is it your responsibility to know the entire potential track record and news log of the actress who was
cast
as them? And it's just, yeah, it's tricky. Because you want to feel like, well, if there was such a big deal, then how are they even still getting jobs?
Oh, I know, but that's a conversation that's like you don't want to step into.
Yeah, I'm sad I even said that. I don't, you know? That was because everyone will have an issue with somebody on that. Yeah.
But. Yeah. 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 So it's tricky because I do think that we hold everybody to like a different kind of standard,
right?
In order to like make sure that they're managing and that they're properly vetting, you know, their digital voice at all times,
right?
And I think that like when we started our original YouTube channel for Super Carlin Brothers and we did this sort of like Brotherhood 2.0 Vlogbrothers-esque year, all of a sudden I do remember having this like massive sense of vulnerability where it's like I could say something and all of a sudden, like, you know, way down in the future, if you were to go back and like look at that particular comment, it's like, wow, Ben, like the world is like, you're always gonna look at it through the lens of today, even though I said it in 2012 or something,
right?
And the kind of vulnerability that comes with that is just so, I think for the longest time it was so hard for me to get past that idea of like, what if I accidentally say something, like
that's just out there,
it's gone out into the world. What actually specifically reminds me of the time when I accidentally uploaded 7 straight minutes of just raw footage of me in our old basement.
Oh man, should have left that up.
I'm so glad we didn't. Have I told this story on the pop before?
I don't think so.
Okay, so once upon a time, I went to export my video for the evening, and I guess I clicked like the media file that I was editing off of.
Yeah.
Instead of
your freshly exported final product.
Exactly. And so I upload this thing, and this was probably, we maybe had like 1,000 subscribers at this point in time. It was pretty early on. I would be willing to bet someone listening remembers this happening.
Oh boy.
But basically, instead of posting my video, which I had not like reviewed the clip after I exported it, which I never would have either. Like this was, you know, I mean, we made 260 videos in the first year. You know, at this point in time, I've made 110 videos or something like that, like, as an individual.
Yeah.
It's never happened before. So I remember uploading it and I would refresh the email on my phone and it would like tell me how many like, you know, comments that we got.
Right.
Because it would be like, oh, you have 12 new emails or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was like, oh man, this one's doing well. And I remember like refreshing it a couple of times and I was like, wow, I'm getting a lot of activity on today. Like I must have really like hit the nail on the head. And then finally I opened up one of them, they're like, is this a joke? And I was like, what do you mean? Like I didn't talk about anything controversial today. And so I took a few of the other ones and they're like, oh my god, he has no idea. And I'm like,
oh no, what did I do?
Yeah. And so I immediately like I pull it down instantly, export, you know, and upload the official video. But sure enough, I had several people tweet me and be like, I recorded that like before it went down. So it's going to save that for a rainy day.
There.
But like, this is the type of thing where early on when you start talking to a camera, you kind of have to get comfortable with it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you're in a basement by yourself. And for me, especially who I usually read off of the facial expressions of others, the camera gives you nothing, you know, it just sits there. It's this little black eye.
Yep.
And so at this point in time, I'd gotten pretty comfortable to the point where I'm like completely exactly who I would be by myself. So like I would make like my hand fart noises in between things, you know, I'd like sing to myself, might burp in between takes or something.
And this is all just what you uploaded.
And this is just all what I'm like, Garen, I've never watched whatever it was that I uploaded. It was like 7 minutes of this, but I know that it was just horrifyingly embarrassing.
I hope someone has it.
I hope they don't. And I would never watch it. It would be the most cringy thing I could imagine.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds pretty cringy.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's frustrating that happened. I'm sorry that happened to you.
That's okay. Yeah. I only blame you for making me get into this whole world.
Yeah, sorry you had to suffer through that half hour of life. But it's interesting to me that, did it have a lot of views when you took it down?
I think it had like 1,000.
Man.
Yeah.
Which I think was it more than usual?
By far.
Yeah. So that's interesting because it means that people must have started sharing it.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
Right.
Right away. Because, yeah, if it was like, oh, this is even more. Well, I forgot about like every day I would wake up and I would check my email and I would do the same thing and be like, how many emails did we get? And if it was like 15 emails, it'd be like, oh, whoa, that was a really good video.
Oh, I know. Yeah. That's exactly it. Yeah. Like 15 emails. Wow.
15 comments. Whoa. Oh, my goodness. Craziness.
Yeah, no, it was that was exactly the measure that I think in the opening year that we used to determine the quality of a video.
Exactly. Yeah. Much has changed.
Much has changed.
Growing up here on the YouTube. Oh my goodness. We haven't talked about the coronavirus at all.
We haven't.
This far in.
Yeah.
So we are, we shut down the office last week. We finally got on that train.
Yep.
After recording the podcast, which I would say it was amazing how much changed from Monday to Wednesday.
Oh, I know. Yeah. You know? I mean, the whole thing, the way that it's been unfolding. So yeah, we haven't been in office attempting. The good news is on our front that we can still continue to do our job in some capacity with very minimal human contact.
Right.
So we really don't have as great of risk as so many do when it comes to this particular problem. And the other good news is, like, you know, Alice, for example, you know, she sells wedding and prom dresses and proms are all canceled.
Right.
And, you know, so like she's staring down the barrel at having just bought for like her biggest season of the year. And now
no one to buy.
There's no one to buy because there's no events. And then even once everything clears up, like there's a reasonable possibility that they might just not reschedule proms.
Right.
So it's not even like, well, we're going to have to survive for 2 months. Then eventually it'll all come at once.
Man, what a bummer if this was your senior prom or something, though.
I've thought about that. There are so many situations. And I think you keep hearing new stories about things you haven't thought of before, where, like, you know, weddings are being canceled and you're like, oh my gosh, you know, like Allie and I just got married earlier this year and it's insane to think, you know, that we missed it by that much, you know, like I can't imagine having gone through all that planning only to not be able to go through with our wedding.
Oh, that would have been, oh, you're right. Gosh. And that it had started by then.
I know.
Just not in America yet. Although that said, I'm not convinced I didn't already get the coronavirus, Ben.
Goodness me.
I'm not convinced that of all places Disney World might have been exposed to it, and that might have been what actually swept through your wedding like crazy.
I mean, of course, we have absolutely no basis for that whatsoever. But
absolutely no basis.
It was rather bizarre because, yeah, we all got to the wedding, and I mean, over 50% of the people who attended my wedding ended up getting a version of the flu.
Yeah.
And so it was hard not to imagine that, like, a highly contagious flu was going around. Who knows? I mean,
who knows?
That, you know, I suppose the only good news on the front is, can you become immune to it?
I don't know.
Okay.
In my head, that's how it works. If you got it, you're good.
You're good. Right. Yeah. But so how has, like, self-quarantine been going for you? Like, is there anything particularly difficult, unusual? Like, is there anything that you've done?
Well, so the weird thing is that we, of course, have Luke at the house.
Right.
And we have the twins in the NICU.
Right.
So Beth has to go see the twins every morning to try and, like, breastfeed and do their care times and do skin to skin and stuff with them.
Right.
So that's a portion of her day. And while she's been doing that, we've had someone come over to the house just for the morning so she can go to the hospital and someone can watch Luke and I can go to work.
Right.
But now we have this coronavirus situation where we're not going to work, but I still need to do work.
Right.
We still have work. So person's still just been coming over and they'll just watch Luke and I'll just work also at the house.
Oh my gosh.
So that's been tricky.
Have you tuned into anything? Have you watched any shows? Is there anything you've gotten, like, particularly? Have you been productive?
I do think I've been productive. I think in many ways I'm more productive when I'm solo.
Interesting.
Because let me tell you, a huge motivating thing for me is being able to stop, is being done with work, like finishing work. So when we come into the office, it's like 8 to 5 or whatever.
Right.
Just about, you know, adjust as needed for the day. But if, for example, at my old job, every now and then as like a, hey, morale booster thing, my boss would walk around and be like, hey, finish up everything you need to do today and just, you know, take, you know, you can leave when you're done with your stuff. And like the fire this would light under me was tremendous, you know, like,
oh, because all of a sudden you're like, get everything done and I get to leave.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. It's not like, oh, space out. Oh, this is what I have to do today and I have to do it by 5. All right. I know about what pace I need to go, you know, whereas if it's this is how much I need to do today and when this is done, I can not be here, then get like, if you like that to me was hugely motivating. I'd be like, yeah, I can knock all this out in about 30 minutes.
Sure.
I don't need to spread this over 4 hours now.
Right. Right.
Yeah, which is, it's so, it's like weird to me because you think as a good employee, you just want to do it all. And if you could do it with all this in half an hour, why wouldn't you? Then you'd be done anyway and you could start working on more stuff.
Right.
Yeah, but that's not how it works. So I think like working at home, I'm like, these are the things I am literally capable of doing from home. It's like this list of things, these are the things I need to do by the end of the day. And if I can finish this list, then great news. I can work on something I want to work on or do something else. So what's been happening at home is that as I finish off my to-do list for the day, then I've been just streaming online, which I still feel like is just really fun work.
Yeah, it's like, still, it's still work adjacent.
Yeah, I'm not like abandoning my post or anything. I'm not like, well, that's it, I'm done. But I'll get to the point where I'm like, there's not really anything else I can do. So I'll do this, which right. is still interacting with people.
Yeah, that's super interesting. And it's always fascinating to hear the way that you talk about like your former job as mm-hmm. well, because I think having been self-employed my whole life, I've never been done with work ever.
Right.
Like it's like when you leave for the day, it just means should I have stayed later?
Right.
I'm going to feel guilty about that until I get up and go to work in the morning. And
right. This is the luxury of being employed rather than being the employer.
Sure.
For sure. And it is nice sometimes to be able to turn it off. Although I will say I would like that was like a short-term thing. There was, I think about this all the time, then it's somewhat comforting to me is that if I'm ever really stressed about things at our job here, if I'm able to sleep through the night, I'm like, I'm still happier than I was. Because I think there was probably a 2 year or so stretch of time where I would only get a full night of sleep every other night. And largely that was just because the night before I only got half a night of sleep.
So, you were so
I was
exhausted.
So tired.
Right.
Yeah. But I would like look forward to that. I'd be like, God, I can't wait till Wednesday when I get a real night of sleep again.
Because I'm so exhausted.
Because I'm so exhausted.
Goodness. Yeah.
You know, that was where it was at.
Okay. Well, I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah. However, I will say, I think everyone should have to work in an office for some amount of time because you just learn a lot about working.
Yeah, but see, the funny thing about that though, I've always felt like we've had maybe not disagreement on this particular topic, but like because you've worked in a proper office and I haven't, mm-hmm. I have always felt that you have felt that your upbringing in the world of professional business mm-hmm. is the correct way mm-hmm. versus my upbringing in self-employment is the wrong way.
Oh, no, I don't think it's the, no, that's, I don't agree with that.
Well, so I think for me, like it's always the type of thing where being self-employed, the advantage of it is that you can assign your own schedule. You can start and stop when you need to. I think for me, I'm aware of the fact that I never feel done or complete with work. Like mm-hmm. you always, and I think that that's part of it. Like, you know, if I left work at 3 o'clock to go ride my bike or whatever, it would just mean that evening I would just continue to mull over all of my objectives and whatever I had going on.
Sure.
And so I think that it's sort of like you're never clocked out, but being inside of a specific space from a specific span of time no longer becomes essential to like completing a full day's work.
No, I don't mean like in terms of like whether or not you can turn it on or off or anything. Just in terms of like learning like how offices function in like an efficient way that isn't obvious.
Okay.
And like even the like there's an art to like writing emails and stuff that right when I got there I would get emails from people and they would freak me out and I would be like, I don't know how to respond to this. I don't know what to say. Like they said something, am I allowed to be like mean back or what I felt like was mean? And it just took like a good while to become really accustomed to what is the appropriate way to respond to emails in a fast prompt way and like what is people being, you know, quick because they have to send 200 emails today.
Sure.
Stuff like that, or like scheduling meetings and how conference calls work and stuff like that, like, you know, just regular office practices.
Sure. And I get that. Like, I know that I've showed you emails before and you're like, oh no, this is normal. And I'm like, what? like, this person is clearly being malicious right now. Like, yeah. I'm pretty sure they're screaming at me.
Oh my gosh. The first time I ever got an email in like a real business setting with the phrase, with the three letters FYI in it, I was mortified, because to that point in my life, FYI had always been like an FYI, like, you know.
Oh, sure, sure, sure. Like, know. For your information, listen up, son.
Yes, that was exclusively how I understood the phrase, the acronym FYI to be used, which stands for, yeah, for your information. But it became, so when I got it, whenever I saw FYI, I would be like, oh my gosh, like, I've totally messed up. I've been totally, like, missed something here. I'm in trouble. But FYI in the business world is literally just like, hey, so you are in the know on this.
Right.
It's not, it was never like, FYI, you totally dropped the ball. It was always like, ooh, here's updated information. FYI, we're moving the start time of this concert from 8 to 7.
Right, you know? Yeah.
It wasn't like, FYI, you messed up and it's actually 8 and it needs to be 7. It was just like, no, here, this is for your information, so you have the information.
Just, yeah. Literally, actually, for your, yeah.
It was like, I was like, oh, is that how that's used? Okay, wow, okay, yeah,
I done did me a learning.
Yeah, but it was like the acclimation to stuff like that took some times.
Interesting. Okay, yeah. So last closing thought on coronavirus that I think has been strangely, in the oddest of ways, like one part of it that has almost been calming to me is the realization of how frequently my actions are being driven by this subconscious inclusion of myself, like, in the quote-unquote rat race. Like, the idea of, like, how often you need to be using, like, spare time to be getting ahead, or, like, you know, I don't know, like the greenest yard, the cleanest cut grass, the nicest shiny car, like the Dursleys effectively, you know, like the parts of my brain, which I would not say is the entirety of my driving motivation for anything, but I would say that it's not none. But like when the whole world is in shutdown, it's almost kind of like the sense of like no one is really getting ahead right now. Like it's almost like we pressed pause on the game of life.
It's sort of what it feels like.
Yeah. And I think that that has been something where typically for me, for several years now, I haven't really had quite the same capability to just like sit down and like binge watch a show and feel okay about that.
Yeah.
And I do feel like there's been more of that where it's like, you know what? I really can't do anything else right now. Like,
so when you say like the greenest grass, the shiniest car, is that stuff you've been working on more?
No. Like it's almost like it's okay to not currently be putting energy or effort into those things because there is this collective pause.
Right.
Like because everybody is like agreeing like, hey, no one's making progress right now. It's all good.
To me, this is one of the most interesting things about the coronavirus is what effects the quarantining of ourselves will have once it's all over.
Right.
Is what things will people realize were non-essential? What amount of I feel like people are probably doing a lot of self-growth right now.
Yeah.
I feel like there's a lot of self-improvement happening. A lot of like the creativity of bored people has been unleashed upon the internet.
It has been.
In whoa, everyone's hilarious and so creative and funny.
Right, yeah. It's like, what do you do when you have no, you posted something, I think today, or retweeted it on Twitter, where it was like a family who was like locked in at Disneyland's resort or something like that. And so they just like created the Pirates of the Caribbean ride.
Right.
Like from either their home or condo or the hotel room they were staying in or something. And it's amazing and it's hysterical.
Yeah.
It's like they've got like all these scenes of them like sitting on like a little like sled on wheels, like rolling through, and they're wearing like their mini ears and Mickey ears.
Oh, yeah.
And
they're like sitting down in the sled and like taking selfies of themselves, like getting on the ride. I was like, so perfect.
Like, you got like all the things in.
You look, understand. Yeah, that's exactly it.
We'll be sure to link that in the show notes. So be sure to check it out down there.
Yes. Absolutely.
But no, I think you're right. I think that there's going to be a lot of things that become the new normal. Like, I think I've wondered about this. shaking hands. Do you think that shaking hands might like cease to be a thing? Because this is something that like normally in high school for me, I would walk down the halls of my high school and in between every class, I would give a high five, shake hand, secret handshake, like with everyone I knew. I probably gave out 200 high fives a day in high school.
Right.
Like literally.
Interesting.
And now to me, it's almost like the idea of like reaching out and physically coming into direct contact with another person feels horrendously inappropriate.
Do you think there's going to be, is there like a emerging germophobic like mindset that will settle as the new safer way? Whereas people might've been willing to throw caution to the wind on a handshake. But now it's like, why would I ever like, when there's another way to greet people?
Why risk it?
Yeah.
I think that's a big one. And you've seen people forever. Like, I feel like there's like the stereotype. I would even say Beth, your wife, is someone who I think forever since I've known her has had hand sanitizer on her.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like, is that a fair assertion?
Yes.
Which, Beth, thank you so much. Absolutely have taken you up on it hundreds of times.
Yeah.
But like, to me, that almost feels like a thing that, like, maybe Beth was an early adopter, like, where it might be much more common for people to just be carrying it.
Well, so this is, I've been seeing so many people, there's been a lot of Office and Parks and Rec memes going around. I'm not sure if you've seen any of these, but are people saying, like, how would this episode of Parks and Rec have been if it was about the coronavirus? And it, like, describes what would happen to every character and in, like, a really, you know, funny, humorous way.
Sure.
Yeah. The one I was reading through that I thought was funny that I feel like will actually emerge as the sort of, like, regular thing was in this episode or whatever, Ben Wyatt would be like, it turns out I was always in, like, he would have been someone who always operated as if he was in quarantine anyway.
Oh, sure.
Like, I already wash my hands 20 times a day and use hand sanitizer and don't touch people or something. You know?
Right.
You know, I feel like that's the sort of mindset that might start emerging a little bit more clearly as, like, are people just going to start washing their hands? Like, because when you think about it, it's like, this is always just good practice.
Well, and you know? That's the thing, yeah. So I remember and I feel so bad saying this now, but like when it first started coming out, I think the thing that was driving me crazier than anything was all the people tweeting at one another being like, just wash your hands. It's like, guys, we're adults. Like, I don't need other adults telling me to wash my, like, I wash my hands 20 times a day. Like, whatever, like so many times a day. I have hand sanitizer at my desk. It's like, you're being a bit condescending. And now I'm like, guys, wash your hands. Like, for real, wash your, like, as many times, if you're thinking about it, it's probably time to do it again.
Right.
Like, and so I feel so bad because it was one of those things that I think right as the onset was coming out, there were people who were probably a couple steps ahead of me in terms of how far along they had gotten in accepting it.
Yeah.
The other one for me is taking shoes off at the door.
Yeah.
This is totally not something that we've ever grown up with. I don't think mom and dad were those people that were like, walk in, shoes off, you know? So I wear my shoes the whole day. Like, they never come off. Shoes are off right now. I know.
I'm not even wearing them right now.
Goodness me.
This is not something, yeah, this is certainly not something our parents instilled upon us, but as an adult, I just came to my own conclusion that I don't like wearing shoes in the house.
Yeah.
One, largely because we've talked about this on the podcast, maybe even on the first episode.
Might have been, yeah.
But one, it's a great way to get dirt everywhere and the stuff you were walking on outside around your house. But the main reason I don't wear shoes in the house is because I don't find shoes to be more comfortable than being barefoot.
So yeah, that doesn't plague me at all. And I think I come in and out of my house while I'm home constantly. Like, I'm not sure if like I'm going in and out more often than other people, but like, yeah, I would say I walk in and out of the house. It would seem like, I don't know. I don't mean throughout the course of like a day from being home from work, I bet I would leave the house again 4 or 5 times.
I would say I step back outside the house few enough times that it doesn't even warrant putting the shoes on.
Right. Well, okay. You know? So I've thought about that, like, before too.
I'm just like, going to the garbage can, so I'm just going to go barefoot or in socks or whatever.
Right. But so I've thought about that. So like, everybody's like a great big concern. Well, not everybody's, but I think some people's concern with wearing your shoes in the house is that you're also bringing in everything you walked on
outside.
But then if you walk barefoot, is that like the double down, like even worse? Like, what's worse, wearing your shoes inside your house or walking barefoot outside your house?
I think wearing your shoes inside the house
is worse.
Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, well, because when you're barefoot, for one, you are a lot more careful about the things you step upon because you can hurt the bottom of your feet.
Sure.
So you'll stay on, like, I mean, not that there's less germs on like asphalt or sidewalks or something, but you're not going to step in like dog poo or something.
Dog poo.
But my thinking is that, and you're not going to go very far barefoot either. So if you're wearing shoes, you can go a lot further and gather a lot more germs. And also shoes often have like treads, which can get more stuff stuck within them. Yeah, that's my thought on it.
Okay.
Yeah, I think it's, but Beth, on the other hand, like if it was up to me, everyone, you just take your shoes off when you get home. Home is a barefoot place. Which it has largely been becoming. But for Beth, and she'll make this argument, is that she feels more like she's on and able to do work. Like if she's barefoot, she may as well be in pajamas. You know, it's like she's not.
I agree with that.
And I understand that's sort of how some people must operate. Like, I would say that if you're a quarantine person, you're having to work from home. Rule number one of working from home is you still have to get dressed for work.
Oh, that's interesting. So like still like get up, shower.
Yes.
Get dressed for work.
Do
everything the way you would.
Hey, pajamas are great, but you're not. You are going to be less productive in pajamas.
I think that's true. I was going to say, you're probably not going to make many friends by suggesting that people still get ready because it's so much easier not to.
No, this is just a helpful tip.
This is not
my opinion. This is just accurate. If you work from home and you're like, man, the advantage is I get to work in pajamas. You're new to this. Let me tell you, I worked from home for a year when we started Super Carlin Brothers. And tip number one, you got to still get dressed for work.
Okay.
I mean, hey, we wear jeans to work every day anyway, so it's not really like a huge deal.
But it's like casual Friday every day.
Yeah, and I already take my shoes off as soon as I get to the office anyway, so it's not a real big deal there either, but...
I still feel like we need to have formal Fridays. Where it's like
the reverse.
It's the exact opposite. Yeah. We're on Friday, like we all wear like a suit.
Oh, I object, but...
All right, well, that's fair. Okay, well, since we didn't do it at the beginning of the episode, let's go ahead and toss in a corny joke before we close out for day.
Of course.
Hey, Jay, how did Darth Vader know what Luke got him for Christmas?
How did Darth Vader know what got him? Oh, I feel like I can get this one. I don't know.
He felt his presence.
Great. Okay. Fantastic.
And since we didn't actually have one in last week's episode, I'll do too. Sound does a witch's car make?
What sound does a witch's broom?
That's exactly correct.
Yes.
Broom, broom.
That's
broom,
amazing.
Broom.
I got it.
Outstanding.
I got one.
Outstanding.
That's fantastic.
Oh, man. I do love the good corny joke.
I mean, who doesn't? Who doesn't love a good corny joke? I do not appreciate people online being like, I love how you guys have all these dad jokes. I'm like, no, these are corny jokes.
That's a completely different thing.
Completely different thing.
100%.
Yeah.
But guys, if you would like to find a way to support the pop, we do officially have one of those. Jay and I are always arguing over who gets to be the official one true host.
One true host of the pop, and who's like, you know, the co-host or something.
Really, the other guy.
The other guy who's just also on every episode.
It's like you have the one true host and the other guy.
Yeah, who's just, it's like, you gotta have someone to talk to.
Right, yeah. I mean, yeah. Someone's gotta talk to someone, right?
Exactly.
So what is your alter ego? I feel like you came up with a clever...
Jazzy J.
That's right. Jazzy J and Buzzy B.
Buzzy B.
Asking you guys to figure out if you want to help vote to see who is the official host. We will do our absolute very best to keep track of it, but you can go to patreon.com/popcornculture. We have three tiers. One of them is the Buzzy B tier. One of them is Jazzy J. Whatever. And then the other one is just no host. No host at all.
No host. It's just two guys talking.
Two dudes talking.
Yeah. Who knows where the conversation could go? There's no structure or anything.
Total mayhem.
Chaos. If that's the kind of podcast you want to listen to, where two guys meander through a conversation aimlessly, then sure, no host might be the option for you.
But be careful what you wish for.
Yeah. Who knows what that would look like?
Otherwise, guys, thank you so much for tuning in. Hope everybody is handling quarantine really well. Be sure to wash your hands.
Yeah. Do it right now. Even if you're listening to this 5 years into the future and the coronavirus is like, remember the coronavirus? just wash your hands right now.
Yeah. What's it going to hurt? Nothing. Nothing at all. Exactly. Until next time. Bye.
Pop.